Look, if you don't get that reference, we can't help you. It's the Day Trippers. On the back of an encouraging victory over Aston Villa and a creditable draw against league leaders, Liverpool headed into a week that held much promise. A disappointing stalemate against Bolton in the FA Cup was followed last night by an exit from the Capital One Cup at the semi-final stage. So, where to now for the Get Jarred to Wembley campaigners, and is top four realistic when we can't score goals? I'm Trev Downing, and join me to give the Costa stamp of approval are on the line the Guardian Sacha Nacrani, and in the bunker Paul Brennan and Phil Casey. Okay, let's begin our look back at the most recent events for Liverpool with a look at the most recent games. And we'd like to break it up, I suppose, into kind of themes rather than looking at them game by game and going through them in a kind of pedantic fashion like that. So we'll start with our goalkeeper, who seems to be experiencing a renaissance of sorts. I think I'd be right in saying he had about 184 goalless minutes there in a row, which was quite impressive until the Chelsea goal went in. Sachin, is it fair to say that a combination of decent, solid defence in front of him and the man's own efforts have led to him maybe recapturing something approaching form?
I think so. I think it's exactly what you said. It's a combination of things. The defence in front of him is play. He's obviously settled now. I mean, I think probably had a good string of consecutive games. Shan, Skrtel and Sacco. And I think his own confidence is high as well. I think you know, depending on how it goes for Mignolet between now and the end of the season, I think you might look back at that Aston Villa game as a really significant moment in his Liverpool career potentially, because I thought he was really good in that game and he made a couple of really important saves. There was one from Benteke, I remember, in the second half. But more than anything, he just looked more decisive coming off his line, clearing the ball, sort of getting hold of the ball from corners and set pieces as well. So I think that Villa game could have been a potential turning point. I think the thing about yesterday, not to get too carried away, is a lot of the good things he did was the stuff we know he's good for anyway, which is kind of reactive stuff. I mean, that sort of stop with his foot, and then there was a little tackle thing as well, which he did, which was very good. I still think he lacks presence in the box, and I think his distribution is still pretty terrible. So I don't think we should get carried away, but he's kind of, in a way, Mignolet's on trial now between now and the end of the season. So he's got sort of 4 months to save his career, his Liverpool career.
Yeah.
So he's doing well. He's doing well. But as things stand in late January, I still think we need to go out and sign a better goalkeeper in the summer.
We're going to go on and look at the defence and how it's made up and how it influenced the result and I guess Mignolet's performance as well. But would you say that it's probably a fair enough shout that if that defence gets any more dismantled than it already is, we may see that guy drop again in form? Do you think it's as integral as that to how he's improved?
I don't know about that. I mean, you'd almost have to ask him himself. You know, you'd have to ask Mignolet himself, like, how much is having three guys regularly playing in front of you helping? I think with any club, having a settled defence, it always improves everyone's form in that defence, because, you know, you work as a unit, as a back, you know, well, in our case, a back four, three plus a goalkeeper. And so it helps everybody. Everybody improves when you're settled. Whether one comes out, I mean, Sacco might be injured now, so whether, you know, someone else coming in destabilizes everybody, including the goalkeeper, perhaps. But I think more than anything, I think he's just got confidence from playing, from being more decisive, from playing with more confidence. And as I said, I think that Villa game potentially was the turning point.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul, I don't think it's talking out of school to say that earlier on you expressed some surprise at the idea of Mignolet having come off his line in a game recently, and delight as well. Some delight in your voice.
Yeah, like, obviously it's quite strange for him, and like it has been great to see him kind of come back into form. And I think it kind of takes it away from him a bit to say that's because of the defence, because I always feel that when you're talking about a keeper, like, if you start going on about the defenders in front of him, I think it's a bit of a cop out. I think it's a bit of a cop out for the keeper. And I also think if you try and say that it's because of the defence in front of him, it kind of takes a bit of the praise away from him, because he does deserve deserve praise for the improvement that he's made. Like, I think it's for someone who's, he's obviously not very comfortable with the ball at his feet or coming out off his line. So for him to keep coming out and to keep showing for the ball, to keep coming out and trying to claim it, I think it's brilliant. I think it's like fairly brave of him. Mm. And the Chelsea, those two saves, that one, the deflection where he kind of hooked it with his foot, and then the kind of the reaction tackle that he made on Costa, that's from confidence. Like, I think a keeper who doesn't have that confidence kind of freezes in both of those moments. Mm. He kind of thinks, ah shit, the deflection's beating me, and I think he freezes in front of Costa and it gets buried. So I think it's great to see that he has come back, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for it. But I'd be with Sash, and I think that come the summer we would be looking for a higher quality keeper who can deliver that more consistently.
Well, as Sachin says, an awful lot of the stuff that we saw from that was good is stuff that you associate with Mignolet anyway, the reaction saves and stuff like that. Is it a coincidence, or is it a function of him improving generally and having that confidence, that his kicking didn't seem to be just as noticeably bad as it has been during the course of the year over recent games as well?
Did you not think so?
Well,
I was going mad last night. I mean, he must have been about three or four times. He just hoofed it out of play with no pressure on him at all. I was like, that's another thing. I don't really think there's any saving him. Like, I think he's too far down the road in his career for his distribution to improve much. Yeah. It doesn't look like it's ever going to improve much. He still barely reaches the halfway line, even from goal kicks. Mm. So I don't think that aspect of his game is really going to be saved. Mm. I think you're looking at him kind of improving, coming out off his line and coming out for crosses. And I don't think he's going to be consistent at that. Like, at this stage of his career, I don't think he's ever going to be that consistent doing that.
Yeah, Phil, we've been talking about this guy, it seems, for 2 years. The same things all the time.
Yep.
And we've talked in the run-up to the transfer window about the necessity to have a replacement or to have someone to work alongside him. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like it's happening. Mm-hmm. Where are you on this whole Mignolet and his form, current form?
He's a goalkeeper for me who's exuding the characteristics of somebody who no longer has anything to lose. Mm. I think I said it to you earlier, I said basically looking at the fella, he is someone who has been under intense pressure for the first half of this season, and just when it looked like he was getting his form, that's when he got bombed from the actual team. That could have ruined him. He comes back in on the back of an injury as opposed to something else. Mm-hmm. And then he's approached it like he has absolutely nothing left to lose in terms of his performances. And he's tried to play in a way that would have been expected from him from the outset. So yes, he's been better coming for the ball. He's been moving around. He's been higher up in his box, and there's an element that he trusts the defenders that are in front of him, whereas he wouldn't have trusted the garbage that was in front of him before Christmas. You know, so he has an idea that, you know, Sacco isn't going to do anything absolutely ridiculous. Emre Can, he knows he's going to get on the ball. He's going to be comfortable. He's going to be able to lay it off. But as we said, Skirtle's able to play that 5 yards deeper than he normally would without affecting the actual line that they're playing, because Emre Can and Sacco can press up that little bit higher, and it doesn't mean that the whole team is sitting deep on top of them. So everything has come together in the right way for Mignolet to more or less be able to throw his own mental shackles off, above anything else, just throw his own mental shackles off and go with it with the best foot forward that he can possibly do. And what it's done is it's seen a revival in his shot-stopping form, because that had gone out the window before Christmas. Like, he was dropping things, simple shots were getting past him. We're talking about the deflection last night, that would have gone in back in October. Mm. And he looks more competent than he did beforehand. But my own reservations when we signed him was that we were signing a goalkeeper who's a good mid-table goalkeeper, so, along the lines of Begovic or whoever else that's there, that will always look good in certain games where they're active and they're asked to do a lot because they're there. But when it comes down to making that vital difference when you're challenging for a league title or you're challenging for something else, you know, they don't necessarily have the skill level that gets you there. Or the presence.
Yep.
Ultimately the presence, because, you know, a team's looking at it, are still thinking to themselves, we can put Mignolet under pressure. We know that his goal kicks aren't going to go, you know, aren't going to cause us trouble. And he's not going to pick somebody out with a 20, 30, 40 yard throw from a collection that he was made. But I would prefer to see him play out the season like this. Mm. And give himself as best a shot as he can to retain his position come the summertime.
Tragically, none of this is our shout, because we'd all love to be in charge, but it's assuming Brendan stays there, and that's a pod for another day. It's his shout. Would you concur with Paul that it's
you know, it's not likely that he's going to see much more than this season unless there's something dramatic that happens.
Yeah, I think that we will definitely see a new goalkeeper in the summertime.
Yeah.
But again, it will depend on who's in charge that will make that decision as to who he is.
Yeah.
I'd definitely keep Mignolet as a backup. I think he'd be a really good keeper that could come in if there's an injury or something. I think he knows, kind of having played a season and a half now or whatever, I think he kind of knows that there's a lot of his game that isn't suited to the way we want to play. And I think that's always going to be in the back of his mind. And I think it's always going to lead to, like, you know, lapses in confidence and stuff. So I just think we're better off getting a more suitable kind of first choice.
Whereas
keeper.
If he's coming in for a cup or to spell in for someone who's injured, they could work out just fine.
Definitely. And look, even if him coming in off the bench, if that's the right mentality for him, like we've seen recently where he got dropped and he came back in and he's like a new keeper.
Yeah.
Like maybe that would be good. Maybe he could like have a good role for us that way.
Mm. I don't think his wages are huge as well, so you can afford to carry him. Like, would you prefer Mignolet challenging another goalkeeper or Brad Jones being the backup to another goalkeeper?
Of course, yeah.
See, that's fundamentally what we're talking about here. You look at all the other teams that are in the top half, and like you look at Spurs and they have Lloris and they have Vorm. You look at City and they have Hart. I don't really rate them, but they have Hart and they've got Caballero, who's an adequate goalkeeper. Look at Chelsea, Courtois and Cech. You know what I mean? They all have adequate backup. Even United, they have Valdez now and De Gea. Oh,
that hurt during the week, didn't it? Same play for the 21s.
It didn't hurt when Jerome Sinclair knocked him past him. Well,
fair enough. A name that was getting mentioned there and dropped, Sachin, was that of Emre Can. And obviously, people go to the obvious, and there's been a lot of kind of lazy chat about him. But we're seeing. I don't know. I don't think it's too strong to say we're seeing the emergence of a genuine star for Liverpool in this guy. Like the presence he has in the ball is something else. The drive forward and the calming effect that he has as well on the defence and those around him is something to behold. Totally belies his tender enough years. Would you agree?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think the fundamental thing with Emre Can is he's a very good footballer. I mean, you get the sense that he could play in many positions. He was probably the kid at school who could basically play in every position. Probably did play in every position. He's just generally a very good all round footballer. I think the move to defence. I mean, I think maybe came as a surprise. Certainly came as a surprise to me, maybe to a lot of people, but wasn't a huge shock given he'd actually done that a lot at Leverkusen. You know, Brendan Rodgers said that, so it's not a completely different position for him. Although I'm guessing playing on the right. Of a back three perhaps is. I think it's brilliant. And I think what's kind of obvious about that position is that Brendan wants a footballer playing there, a footballing defender, because when he first did it against United in December, he had Glenn Johnson there. And he's obviously desirous to have somebody who can carry the ball out. And then Can obviously was able to then slot in and do that role. You know, he can do that role. And I think it's great because it puts the opposition on the back foot, thinking there's this guy in their defence, which if we lose the ball high up the pitch, he can basically just completely get past that. So it must put doubt in opposition forwards, opposition midfielders, that they can't get too far forward, because if you lose it on that side of the pitch, he'll just carry it past you.
Yeah.
I think he's been brilliant. I mean, for me, originally when he arrived, what was so good about him was he gave us power in midfield, which we basically haven't had since, and we could argue since Momo Sissoko left. So he can always give you that still. He can always give you that option, because we haven't got a lot of, you know, big presence in midfield. But the way things are looking, I mean, he's probably making that third centre-back or that right centre-back position his own. And, he's going to take a lot of shifting at the moment, in my opinion.
But ideally, I'm picking up that you'd be like a lot of us, you'd like to see him step forward at least one position there on the pitch, long-term.
I don't know, actually. Not necessarily. I mean, I was slightly unconvinced by the back three, and I still wonder how long Liverpool will play that. I think Rodgers basically sort of threw caution to the wind when he did it. I think he just got to the point where he thought, you know, it's just not working with the back four. We're conceding too many goals. The protection isn't there. Let's do this and it'll allow me to get other players on the pitch. I don't think he saw it as a long-term solution. I certainly didn't. But, I mean, it's working really well. I mean, we'll probably talk about this later, but our form and our sense of identity has returned. And I think it's got a lot to do with the system. Most of the players will be, you know, very comfortable in it. And I wonder if, you know, I don't know if he's been asked the question yet, but if Rodgers is now saying, this is my system, this is the system I want to go forward with for the rest of this season, for next season, and why wouldn't you necessarily just keep Emre Can as that third midfielder? Maybe when he's a few years older, he then does move into midfield, because you get the sense that he's probably wasted there.
Yeah.
But for next season, at least, perhaps, if they're going to stick with the system, he plays there.
What do you think about that, Phil? Is that where somewhere you'd like to see him long term? Or
look, ultimately, I think he's the future of our midfield. If you look at that formation, and if you had him and Henderson in the middle with three competent centre backs behind them as well, you've got such a powerful midfield. Not only can they cover, they can also go box to box. He can just power pass players. As Hash says, that was one of the great things. If you remember back when we saw him against Chelsea in the home match in the league, and he just powered past Matic, and Matic couldn't live with him. Even last night, felt like somebody tried to shoulder him, and he was knocked flying off him. I was just laughing, saying, "Yeah, go on, have a go again." Do you know what I mean? And I think he'll offer a lot more in midfield than he will in the centre back position. But as I said a while back, he reminds me so much of Ronnie Whelan when he came to the club, and that he was comfortable playing at centre back, or he played in centre midfield, and ultimately he ended up in centre midfield, and then he moved back to centre back again. And you know, he's so many similar traits in terms of the way he plays the game as well. Both of them are great passes. They're great vision when they're on the ball as well. Mm. And they're able to pick out a pass and execute it and deliver it well. And when they were playing at the back, they didn't look to hoof the ball. If the one thing I notice when he's on the ball at the back, he never looks to hoof it. He takes it down. He's aware of the options that are around him, and he looks to play it out of defence. And he will get caught out a couple of times trying to do that. That's going to happen. And on all ball-playing centre-halves get caught out at certain times. And, you know, we've watched other teams with ball-playing centre-backs over the years. And we've always said, oh, it'd be great to have one of them, like, do you know what I mean? And now we've got two, him and Sacco. Sacco is just as good on the ball. He doesn't, it's this thing about what he looks like when he's on the ball, but he's so confident, he's so adept to reading a pass and being able to deliver a pass as well. You know, having the two of them there just gives us so much more at the back, that it's not just hoofing it and hoping that somebody at the top end gets on the end of the ball. It just gives us that little bit extra. And even last, I saw people saying, oh, Chan's had a poor game. I don't know what game they're watching.
That's incredible.
I don't know what game you're watching. And most of came after, I think he teared down the right wing, right?
Is it where he lost the ball?
When he lost the ball to Luis Felipe, up on the edge of the Chelsea box. This is your right centre back.
Yes.
He's just gone on a run down the wing, right? Yeah. Ran past a couple of players, and he ends up being caught out by their fullback. And then a couple of minutes later, the ball is played and he's back in position. You know what I mean? It's not that he's just...
Yeah, they went straight down the pitch and he followed them. Like, he was back with the play. Like, his all-round potential is off the charts. Like, you could pick any position along the defence. You could put him fullback, I think he'd be brilliant. You could put him anywhere in midfield. You can put him in front of the defence, in the engine room, or you could even put him further forward. And I think he looks brilliant. I think he's basically the player that a lot of people think Phil Jones is. I think he can do like almost anything in the middle and the back side of the pitch.
Phil Jones is like the car prototype of Knight Rider. Emery Chan is kit. When he finally fixed all the problems, the look of it and everything, he's like, oh, that's kit. Yeah, that would be bad. Don't get my car.
Yeah, but like, he just seems to be able to do absolutely anything. And I'm with Session. I don't think we're going to be long term with three centre backs. I don't think Rodgers has got. I think he's kind of done it as a quick fix for the moment, and he's running with it because it's worked. But I think in the summer, I think he will want to go back to four at the back. And I think it would be probably a bit of a waste keeping Chan back there because of what he could become if he keeps developing as a midfielder. Because like his all around the game is just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, in the short term, Session, we're going to hopefully keep this system the way it is and keep the personnel the way they are, but that will be very much dependent on how long Mama Sacco is out for. Have you heard anything or what the latest is on that injury of his?
I haven't, no, I don't know. Hopefully not too serious. I mean, the worry is Lovren comes back in and just fucks it all up completely.
We were just discussing the potential for the Johnson, Lovren and Skirtle.
Are the Ivory Coast out of the African nations?
please come back,
exactly,
Colo.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, cool for Colo, I don't know. I don't know how long he's out for. Just one thing on Sacco. I mean, like everyone, I'm sure you guys as well, I've become a huge, huge fan of his, and I think he's been brilliant. Got to say one thing, though. I still think the way his body shape is very strange. He does seem to burn his heel a bit. And I know 98% of the time, 99% of the time, it's fine. He looks a bit awkward, but he plays the ball very well. But there was that one sideways pass he played yesterday, where he gave the ball away. And I don't know. I'd love to sort of ask him in a way, like, does he have to sort of play like that in a way?
Yeah.
I mean, he just looks...
Very
I've never
brave.
Seen, I've never seen a really good footballer look so bad, if you know what I mean. He's obviously clearly very good, but he's kind of the way, you know, he plays on his heels almost. It's really bizarre.
Yeah.
And you always feel that type of pass he played yesterday, that could happen at any moment in a game. It's just slightly worrying with him, but maybe I'm overblowing it. But as I said, he has generally been excellent.
I always get a little bit wary of the whole thing, because it brings me back to Alex Ferguson and Jordan Henderson's running gate, and that was proven to be fairly shy observation on his part. But yeah, no, I totally accept what you're saying. But would you would be very much agreeing with what I was saying there. He's absolutely central to us keeping this reasonably good run going, isn't he?
Oh no, absolutely. I mean, he's been fantastic since he came back. Why he sort of lost his place originally, you know, there was obviously talk of sort of problems behind the scenes with him and Brendan Rodgers. I don't know if that's true, and I think he came back through necessity almost. Rodgers thought, I just have to bring this guy back in because Lovren shot and he was going to the three, obviously, and he's left-footed, all that stuff. So, but he's been brilliant, and he's clearly a very, very talented defender. And I think once this injury, however long it has been for, he had an injury, was it last season or start of this season, where then he just couldn't get back into the team. Once it's over, this injury, you just have to bring him back. You know, I don't think we need problems we had last time of him. Now, he's clearly, we haven't got many world class centre backs.
Well, realistically speaking, if we have to go on a run of games with Glenn Johnson in that position, and it looks like he's ahead of Lovren, let's be honest. How worried would that make you? Like, to be perfectly honest, based on what you saw last night, for example.
Well, with Glenn Johnson playing,
yeah.
Possibly. I mean, I don't know with Johnson. He's a funny one, because again, he's like Chan in the way that he's a very talented footballer. I think his talent is beyond doubt. He's kind of almost his levels of concentration, his levels of desire. Now, if this contract situation gets sorted out, which has been hanging around for a bit, maybe that will, you know, I think that's been at the back of his mind a bit. I don't think he's particularly happy that this hasn't been sorted out. If that gets sorted, that might help. I mean, I think generally for all parties, it would be best if he just leaves in the summer. I think we've reached that point with Johnson where it's just generally doesn't feel like it's going to work out. And I would be slightly concerned if he's playing now for a sustained period of time. But then again, he's capable, as he's shown during his entire Liverpool career, to have a spell where he's absolutely brilliant. And this role of a ball-playing centre-half, if you guys have been talking about, it could actually suit him quite well. So we'll reserve judgment until he's in the team.
Yeah, I suppose that's probably the healthiest thing for all of us to do.
I think he's awful. I do, genuinely. Yeah. Like when he came on last night.
You've never mentioned that before.
No, but when he came on last night, it was like a nuclear explosion went off in the defensive solidity that we've had for so long. It was just like, they stopped attacking down Chan's side and the whole lot, and they just focused solely where he was, and there was a gaping hole that they just kept running into. Mm. And he was just trotting around like, what's going on? How did I end up here?
I'm
going
to risk your wrath and say I didn't think he was that bad last night. I didn't notice him being too bad.
But you didn't notice him because he was the phantom defender. He may as well have been sitting up in the stand for like 25 minutes.
He was out of position a lot, fair.
I know we haven't talked about the goal, and I know we're going to get on to, you know, Balotelli's stupid pass and him tracking Costa on the run and leaving the
van. Well, let's talk about it now. We might as well talk about
it. Okay, well, if the one thing that, and Carragher came out and said, look, he wouldn't have put all the blame on Balotelli in that instance, because if they're Americans only, Costa runs into the zone that Balotelli's marking and he has to go with him. So the person that's marking the next zone then is the Phantom. And he's actually get turns off so much on that free kick that he's behind everybody when the header goes in. So even like the likes of Chan and Skirtle are level with the Chelsea players and, you know, ready for if the ball is in their zone, so they're going to attack it. There's nobody in that zone, because your man is standing on the other side looking at the fella heading the ball into the back. Now, you'd also question, why is Balotelli, if they are picking up man-to-man, right, why is Balotelli picking up Ivanovic, who's arguably their biggest threat off a set piece?
Yeah.
Because how many times has Ivanovic scored goals off set? It always seems like every second week or every third week, Ivanovic is scoring a header off a set piece.
And if you look at the still, it's absolutely remarkable. He's 3 feet higher than everybody else in acres of space. That's just negligent.
Yeah. And it was because there was a couple of corners as well where Balotelli was marking Ivanovic. So it was a conscious decision that kind of you're picking up Ivanovic when, like, so I know he obviously we kind of go half zonal, don't we, in those corners. So he wants to put like the likes of Skirtland, Chan along the 6 yard box, the big lads. But you have to have someone who's at least going to compete with Ivanovic, like, because it's not like that's not Balotelli's game. He even said to Rodgers, didn't he, in training, I don't mark a corner.
If you're going to use him, you use him as the fella just off the near post towards the edge of the 6 yard box. So if someone tries to fizz it in the near post, he's more or less taking a free header to clear it. Something that Lucas
like
does.
Gerard, like,
yeah, or Lucas does as well, right? So you know, that's where you put him. You don't give him the responsibility of picking up arguably Chelsea's
best header.
They're
dangerous, yeah.
You know, and look, the goal itself, you know, it's crazy.
You see, he's involved again there. That's why people have the name.
The initial phase, it's a very sloppy pass. It puts Lucas under pressure. Lucas then looks like the third player that he was from about 60 minutes on. Now, again, going back to the Johnson change, you know, there were so many things wrong with the in-game management that went on last night. You know, the dropping Gerrard back into midfield.
Bringing Gerrard back, yeah.
You know, when obviously at that stage, they've made substitutions to freshen things up. Yeah. And you need your legs in the centre of the park. And we looked visibly like we couldn't get out of our own half at that stage. And if you think back to the first half when we were playing reasonably well, we were pushed up, we were pressing, we were harrying them the whole lot. And from about 55, 60 minutes on, that dropped off. So there's a question, I couldn't figure out. I know you leave Steven Gerrard on because he's a goal threat or whatever, but in that instance, you know, there's as much reason to take him off. If you're going to switch the thing around to play Lambert up top, which God knows what he's going on there, putting him onto the pitch for, right? But you could have brought Lallana on. He's going to keep the pressure high. He's going to at least be able to run around the pitch and close off
space.
And
he's seen that substitution work comparatively well recently. I mean,
especially in the last game.
It happened, you know?
That's the one thing I looked at. Like, we'd next to nothing on the bench. Like, we know he doesn't particularly rate Balotelli or Lambert, so attacking wise, he didn't have much that he wanted to put on. But Lallana for Gerrard looked like one of the only natural changes you could make to me, because like obviously we're not going to dominate them at Stamford Bridge the way we did like in midfield at Anfield. So the midfield's going to be more functional, like Lucas and Henderson, and you're relying more on the kind of the two behind the striker to get turned and get us going the way Coutinho does. So it made sense to put Lallana there because that's what he can do. He can get us turned and get us running at the Chelsea defenders, and he didn't go for it. And he dragged Gerrard back into, you know, where Chelsea are strongest. Everyone behind Costa, you'd have got Hazard, Willian, and all like buzzing all over the place, and he drags Gerrard back into that late on in the game when Gerrard's tired.
And you could see he visibly was tired as well.
Yeah, I heard people one or two people saying last night, what's the point of Willian? What does Willian do? Willian just never stops running. He's always there. He's always linking play.
William would have smashed shit up if we got him.
Yeah,
he'd have been brilliant for us.
I'm
with you. You see some of our hands, he's shy. You're like, what?
Just watch the game.
Like, just stop.
Sachin, we're kind of gone off target there, and I want to get back to the actual concession of the goal itself and just talk about it briefly because we need to, and then we'll go back to the in-game management and all those kind of things later. But on the goal itself, it's very, very, very hard to be too critical of Lucas, even though he totally Lucas'd it by giving a free kick away in the Lucas zone. You know, it's hard to be too critical on him because the guy was absolutely immense. Like,
it's hard to be too critical. He Lucas'd it in the Lucas zone.
He did.
Listen, anyone who knows me knows I'm a fan of the guy, but I he had an immense match, I thought, and unfortunately, his thing happened. But it's because of Balotelli's ridiculously lazy pass, isn't it?
Yeah, no, unlike you, I'm not going to criticise Lucas. No, I'm joking. I think he played brilliantly. He was immense. He has been immense for weeks. He was fantastic. He just looks like a leader on the pitch as well. You know, I think he was getting the referee's ear a bit. He was just kind of getting laterally and vertically across midfield, just covering so much space as well. And, you know, quite rightly, he was probably a bit tired. It was a slightly tired tackle, but it was also, I think, a tackle out of desperation from a, you know, sort of panicking in a way because he didn't see it coming because Balotelli gave the ball away. You know, it ultimately came to that. I mean, saying all of that, you know, it has been my biggest bugbear of the season. You know, okay, Balotelli gives the ball away, Lucas fails, but it's still then a set piece which we could do better at clearing, and we have been absolutely appalling at set pieces.
And it never improves, yeah.
It doesn't improve. I don't know how much time Roger spends on it on the training pitch. I personally don't think he cares enough about defending set pieces. I just don't think he gets angry enough about it. It goes way back to sort of the Roy Evans era of every time Liverpool get a corner, a set piece against them, I'm sort of bricking it, thinking, okay, they might not score, but they're going to get a chance out of this.
Yeah.
You can't go on. You know, this is unsustainable for a football club. How can you keep winning trophies? How can you win trophies if you haven't defended set pieces? And I, I know people say, oh, actually, you only ever concede, I don't know, 0.3 of corners and free kicks. Well, it feels like sort of 97, 98% with Liverpool, that opposition win them. They might not score from them, but they win them, which then creates more doubt and problems in the, which then leads in itself to more goals. So it's kind of a vicious cycle.
Yeah. And when you kind of juxtapose that with our uselessness at the far end with our own set pieces, it's just not a very strong area for a game.
Well, somebody made a really good point where they said probably one of the reasons we're so bad at them is in training, they're never defending good set pieces of defence because we can't take good ones. Taking shit at defending them. I mean, it's bizarre because last season we scored loads of goals from corners as well. So I don't know why we're not doing it anymore. But yeah, I'm not as worried about that too much because I think the goals from open play will improve once Sturridge comes back, etc., etc. But I think defending them is just—it's just absolutely appalling, and it can't go on next year. Really can't.
Phil, do you want to come in there?
Yeah, like you look at defensively, and over the two ties, we were actually quite good. Straight up, like we were, like in terms of what we did against Chelsea, over given the reputation they've taken into it, given you know everything that's going on.
But they don't cross the ball.
They don't cross the ball.
We hate crosses.
We hate crosses, but they do on set pieces. So you think like the only
crosses they did.
Their two goals come from a penalty, right? Which comes off a cross from the byline, and the second goal is a free kick whipped in. Now. You know, you could look at how many other things could we have done to stop that. Maybe if you have a more proactive goalkeeper, he comes through the forest of bodies and tries to get a punch in that ball. It's a horrible ball in terms of it's a great delivery because it's whipped away and back in. You know what I mean? Mm. But at the same time, if you have a lunatic coming for that, like and just coming for everything, he probably comes out and does something with it. If you know, if I'm looking at it and saying, does Courtois do something there? He probably does. He probably takes command of the situation. He looks at who's lining up in the defence. He goes, bollocks to that, I'm going to have to come for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially if it comes into that particular area. So it's like, I'm going to have to come for everything there. And it's the frustration of free headers because even going back to you know the previous games, the Villa game, you know when we won the Villa match, and you remember the chances that they made were offset pieces, and it was poor finishing, but we seemed to be better at mopping up the second chances that were coming offset pieces, which is something we hadn't done. So there's been a progression there in terms of being able to tidy up after the initial melee or mayhem that's going on. We seem to be getting better tidying that piece up, but we can't seem to defend the forced header. So if the forced header is a header and goal, they've got a 50-50 chance whether they're going to score, and that's literally where we are at this moment in time. And it's a shame, really. But again, it doesn't really change anything from last night, even though we conceded. We had to score.
Yeah.
If we didn't, if that goes to nil all after 120 minutes, we still go out on the away goal rule. So the fact that we can't score is a bigger problem in that Chelsea match.
But that was my immediate reaction as well. I was like, oh, fuck it, we still had to score anyway.
We still had to score.
And, you know, to take it to whatever, you know, and we just had nothing.
No, we didn't. And I was more depressed after that game last night. I wasn't buying into the whole, oh, that's, you know, great signs of progression of the whole. I've seen signs of regression in the Bolton game and in that game. Yes, our football looks a lot better to watch in terms of the way we're playing with it. You know, there seems to be purpose and the whole lot around it. But it just, where we were making chances in the games before then, we seem to have stopped making chances. I can only think of two real clear ones, which was the save Courtois pulls off on the 1v1, and then also the missed header from Henderson. Yeah. You know, the missed header from Henderson is the moment where we lose that tie. You know, he gets a header 7 yards out, goal is wide open, and he doesn't get that on target. If he gets that, if he gets that 2 yards inside the post, it's a goal, and it's, you know, it's penalties.
Paul, it feels a little harsh, doesn't it, to go at Henderson's miss, because
I'm not going at him. I'm just
you said what you said, Phil, right?
Yes. I'm going at him. Yeah, it does seem harsh to say it, right? But if that's Lambert, if that's Balotelli, right, the amount of fucking abuse that will be going on.
And they miss it, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The amount of abuse that goes on, or even the level of abuse Sterling gets for missing chances.
Well, I don't think Henderson's exactly been bereft of abuse over the course of his career.
He's earned
a break.
I know, but what I'm saying to you is, again, it's the player that's on it, right?
Yeah.
That, you know, there isn't the same level of vitriol that's gone towards the miss itself, right? You put one of the two lads up front who just aren't performing. You put Borini in that position, like Borini's miss against Bogdan at the weekend, when he should put that in the back of the net and he allows Bogdan to save it, right? You know, that's what I'm talking about. They're the key moments that you need the players, the strikers, to stand up and make them count. And even the midfielders, if Henderson is going to be the leader at this club, right, then that's the moment where leaders like the likes of, that's what say Keane would have done for United when,
yeah,
when you think back to
Churian,
that's when he makes the difference. When you think of what Gerrard has done through the years, that's when he's made the difference. Those big, really important moments, that's when those players have stepped up and made their mark.
Yeah, in the midfield area where, and I take Phil's point that scoring is very much a part of the midfielder's job, especially these days in the way that we play. But in the midfield areas, when he was allowed to play in the bloody midfield and wasn't getting shunted out to wing back or whatever to accommodate Gerrard moving back in when those strange changes were going on, he did his job more than impressively. You know, Lucas alongside him, it's a good unit.
Yeah, I think, obviously, because I think with the system that we have, like, I think we saw kind of two sides of the midfield, like one at Anfield where they were all over Chelsea, like we completely kind of outplayed them. And then I thought at Stamford Bridge, it was a bit more functional from Henderson and Lucas, where they protected, they screened really well.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of just like a bit more functional going forward, just kind of make sure we get the ball into the forward players who can obviously, that there's more space for them to break into then. So yeah, it is a decent unit. And I thought it was quite harsh for Henderson to be moved out when the substitutions were happening, for him to be moved out to wing back and basically be playing right, basically as a right back up against the wide players. So yeah, I thought that was a poor substitution, really.
Lucas took a very impressive yellow card for the team at just at the right time. A delightfully cynical foul as well.
Which one did he actually get booked for? Because he could have been booked for a
well, he could, in fairness, yeah, but he left his foot in nicely. I have to say, I love stuff like that. Like, you're up off your cage, going, get in, you know. That's what you want to see.
Well, yeah, like we're all gone mad about Costa, but let's be honest. If it was one of our players getting the little stamps in, winding everyone up, we'd have loved it. We loved it when Suarez did.
Listen,
it.
We had a fella who's bitten somebody on the pitch,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and has done and did those stamps. Like, there was, remember the one on the back of Morales's leg in the derby, right?
Yeah.
He pulled Raphael's hair. Do you remember that? He's a master of the dark arts as well. And had Costa signed for us when we went in for him, imagine having the amount of destruction that would have been on the pitch with those two. Like they could have taken turns as to who's going to go nuts this week.
People are being so, I don't know, easily offended. Wait till the real Costa comes out and he starts gobbing on his hand and flicking at
him.
Let's be honest, that's the real Costa.
Yeah.
He hasn't even showed up yet.
His whole game is about winding the opposition up, right?
Yeah.
And you can see, even at the end of it, like the players themselves know what he's up to, right? You know, there's a whole lot. Like, fair play to Henderson standing up to him last week, but that's to Costa, he's getting the reaction he wants. No matter what you do to that fucker, right? He's just, once he's getting a reaction out of you and he's not getting punished for the reactions, then he's winning. In his head, he is winning.
It's absolutely incredible how he doesn't get punished, though. Like, you know, you know, when as soon as him and Chan fall like beside each other off the pitch, if you're a referee, surely every fibre of your being says, Costa has fallen on someone here. Something's going to happen. I'll just keep my eye on it. Yeah. But no, Costa gets up, stamps straight down on Chan's leg. Like everyone in the stadium knew he was going to do.
Yeah.
And nothing. He just gets away with it. It's absolutely incredible.
And then the skirt one is the exact same.
Yeah.
It's going and it's going to
kick. You know what he's like fucking Michael Myers or something. Like, you know, he's like, oh, look, something's going to happen here. How come she doesn't know something going on there? How come she doesn't know he's there? That's what it's like to read the ref. Ref, look, it's about to happen, ref. Would you not look at it? No. Bang, elbow in the face or stamp on the ankle. It's like a really bad horror film or something like that.
And I believe he's gotten his three matches and it'll probably get reduced to one on appeal. And that's it. And it's only on the Chan incident. The skirt one, I believe, wasn't flagged at all.
Everyone is a bit more like he could probably claim like, oh, I was trying to jump over me. Clearly wasn't, but like the Chan one was.
Well,
the
like
obvious
his manager
one.
Said, it was an accident. You know?
Yeah,
he tries to jump over him, notices that he's on the ground, and you can see the leg just
his eyes are just on Skirtle's ankles the whole time. Like,
he's like, you're understanding him.
Did you see Markovic doing the off the ball shoulder into, was it Oscar's face or something?
Yeah.
It was beautiful. Like, you can only see it down the bottom of the camera. We do need like a little bit more of that. I think
he's got that about him, you know. I think he could really develop that side of his game really, really nicely.
Yeah.
And in fairness, his comrade on the other side got the most delightful dig in on Ivanovic, who was breaking down the flank, and Moreno tracked him all the way back, knocked him to shit on his arse and emerged with the ball and strolled majestically up the field. That's what you want to see.
My favourite was, do you remember when Costa was breaking and himself and Sterling were running side by side each other, and I was like, Costa took a mad dive. It's just like,
oh, yeah.
And he's looking around going, I was fouled here. And the ref was like, no, you weren't. He didn't even touch legs.
But that was about Costa's fifth like bookable offence at this stage of being horrible dive. The ref said, as usual, nope, didn't see it.
Didn't see it.
It's Michael Myers, he's right there.
Nope, can't see it.
Sachin, we've name checked Raheem Sterling. A very, very industrious performance by him leading the line. I thought he was one of our more impressive performers by a mile. Of course, when you're in the middle there, you're tasked with scoring the goals. He didn't do that, but you know, a very, very willing and decent performance by him.
Yeah, no, he was excellent again. He's sort of learning on a job, really. I mean, playing a lone striker is hard enough, but let alone when you're not actually a striker as well. I think, you know, you were talking about long-term positions with Emre Can. I think, as things stand, this is certainly not a long-term position for him, and not just because Sturridge is to come back. I just think Sterling's finishing is still generally really, really hit and miss. He just isn't a natural finisher. You know, if you talk about Robbie Fowler being a natural finisher, he's clearly not. And obviously that's something he can work on. He's extremely young and he'll get better at it. And he has scored some decent goals this season, but I just think he's going to miss more than he scores. So I think the perfect role for him is just to play off someone with, you know, someone like Sturridge. So he's still got that space to run into because he's got so much pace. He's got so much stamina. He's got so much willing. I think one of the real disappointments, he got lost a bit in the end because it was so early on. But that moment early on where he didn't square the ball to Gerrard sort of early on, first half, I mean, that was for me a massive moment. I mean, watching the replay as well, he just rolls that ball to Gerrard, and I think Gerrard's pretty much one-on-one with Courtois, and you know, he's clear on goal. I mean, little things like that which just show that sort of instinct of playing as a lone striker, when to go, when to give under pressure from centre-backs he hasn't got. But as I said, he's done fantastic well given it's not his natural position.
Yeah, and what about Coutinho behind him? We might as well talk about the two guys together, because one man was always kind of looking for the other, and Coutinho, actually I had a wee chat on Twitter with somebody last night who was trying to tell me that Coutinho wasn't that impressive. I begged to differ. I thought he was fantastic. How did you feel he performed on the night?
I thought he was brilliant. I think he's been here 2 years now. He came up January 2013, and I think undoubtedly this is his best spell at the club. I think he's absolutely fantastic. The way he carries the ball through midfield from sort of, you know, the edge of the D in the opposition's half to the edge of the D on their penalty area is just absolutely sublime. I mean, he's playing with great confidence. And as you said, his link-up play with Sterling is brilliant. I mean, I can't believe anyone thought he had a poor game yesterday. I thought he was brilliant. I thought he did as much as he could. I'm still not convinced he's saying everything I've said. He's an out-and-out number 10, just purely because I don't think he's going to get you the goals. I just don't think he's got it in him to get the goals that eventual number 10 needs to get for a side. But I think, I don't know how it will work, you know, once everyone's fit, and depending a lot on the system we play. I mean, if we go back to the sort of the diamond, I think that would suit him best, coming in from that sort of a slightly deeper midfield position. I mean, I think the archetypal Coutinho game for me was the 5-1 against Arsenal last year, where he played in a midfield three. And as well, he showed a great ability to press the ball in that game, which he did fantastically well, and then to immediately spring a pass to Sturridge, to Sterling, to Suarez ahead of him. And I think he can do all of those things brilliantly well. And from a deep position, he can carry it forward as well. So I think if Liverpool do go back to a four-man midfield in some sort of shape, or a three-man midfield, that's where he'll ideally be played. I'm just not quite convinced that he's a long-term number 10.
Phil, that's one of the things that sort of sticks in your craw as you're watching Liverpool at the moment. You're watching Coutinho, who's patently such a wonderful player in wonderful form, and you're thinking, imagine just one more guy who's mobile and inventive ahead of him, as well as Sterling, as in Daniel Sturridge, and like the havoc that could be wreaked, you know.
Yeah, every time he gets in the ball, he's looking for runners. So when we bring on the other two up front, he doesn't have anything in front of him, and you can see that's the difference when he had even Lallana. The Lallana, not bringing Lallana on, it confused the hell out of me, because the one thing he does do is provide the movement that helps us,
which is the point I'm making. So you're watching this guy, he's labouring away, and as Sachin said, so wonderful at carrying the ball and taking it through that little zone.
Takes it through crowds. What he's great is he's great to be able to play. He'll take it on to beat one, play a 1-2, be back around the other side of the man, pick
and
it
then
up. If there was a
ball on, he can give the ball, but the ball tends not to be these days.
That's when we went to a very, very static, statuesque front two, you know what I mean? So looking at it, you're saying, I thought of all our players, he was the standout player for me. Like, I think Chan had a great game in terms of what he did, but looking at Coutinho, if something was going to happen, it was always going to come off the boot of Coutinho. Mm. Again, similar to Sterling, his shooting is woeful. You know what I mean? And that's his greatest bugbear. It's the pulley drag shot that he always hits.
Pulley draggy, yeah.
The pulley draggy shot.
Yeah.
But for me, he remains a player closest in style to Iniesta. So he isn't a 10. He isn't like a powerhouse midfielder. But what he is is a link player in that midfield, who's incredibly good attacking wise. Will create magic around the box and create things for other people to go and finish off. And that's quintessentially Iniesta. Like, and he was the best in terms of doing that. Like, you wouldn't say that Iniesta is a front three player. At the same time, you wouldn't say he's a box to box midfielder.
You also wouldn't expect Iniesta to be particularly effective if he had Balo and Lampost ahead of him.
No, you wouldn't, but then you could be surprised. Maybe he's just that little bit better than Coutinho.
Paul, where do you stand on the Sterling and Coutinho performances from the last two games, really?
Yeah, I think Sterling was obviously he was always going to have a real tough job at Stamford Bridge. There was obviously going to be a lot of running up against four lads, basically almost on his own, with Coutinho trying to break up with him and Gerrard when he could. Coutinho, he's just been absolutely spectacular to watch recently. I've loved the way he's kind of reacted to the roles that those two roles that have been created nearly behind the lone striker, the narrow kind of. It's like the top of a box midfield, like the two of them behind the striker. And what's wrong with you?
You just said it for the words.
You are?
Top of the box.
just completely ignore him and go ahead.
Okay. I just like the way he's reacted, the responsibility that he's taking. It doesn't matter who we're playing, you know what he's going to do. He's going to drop into midfield, pick the ball up, spin past someone and run. And he'll just do it all day. I mean, Mourinho is one of the best in the business at stopping the opposition playing. And he's had kind of weeks of looking at Liverpool and he still couldn't stop Sterling.
Couldn't touch him, yeah.
Like, Matic is one of the best players around, basically, and they still couldn't touch him. You can't stop. You have to stop Liverpool other ways, because you're basically, at the moment, you're not going to stop Coutinho.
That was the main reason he played Zuma last night as opposed to Cahill, because Zuma has more pace about him. And you could see there was a couple of times Sterling looked to break and you thought he was through, and Zuma was able to catch back up with him again.
Yeah.
He zoomed up a piece alongside
him. He did zoom up, yeah. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
We've got a certain limited time left, so I want to go through a couple of things. We should touch on Brendan's substitutions and the way that the game panned out because of those decisions. And we might also touch, as a result of that, on Gerrard and the use of Gerrard in terms of, look, I don't know, maybe this is going to sound very, very controversial. I don't think it will, but he looked like a bit of a waning force, I thought, in that game last night. And
I think it's accepted.
I think
that's accepted. I think, and we sort of brushed on the substitutions. Like, they're baffling. All in, they're baffling. Like, you spend 20 million quid on a centre back in the summertime, and we bring on a fella who's out of contract and offers absolutely nothing to the team. Right. So you either does that mean that Lovren is finished in terms of in Brendan's eyes that he's finished? Because it wasn't that even Johnson was coming on as a right centre back. He came on as the left centre back. You know what I mean? That's Lovren's first choice position. So you'd imagine if you're going to bring a guy back into the team, at least he's coming back in his natural position, and you're saying he's a centre-back, so at least have a concept of what he has to do there.
He'd have to be on the bench in the first place, wouldn't he?
He was on the bench.
Oh, he was, okay. it was the previous game.
He wasn't on the bench for the Bolton game.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's baffling.
Yeah.
Right, he brings Balotelli on. You can start to see the logic, but the game is screaming out for Lallana, not Balotelli, to come in that instance, right? Because you want to keep that mobility in the front three. Mm. You want to make sure that the running is still there as you head into extra time, and hopefully gaps open up. By bringing Balotelli on, we know that he's not going to do the same level of
and
running.
And it's going to reduce that tempo and mobility.
Yeah.
So then what do you do next?
Lambert.
You take on Ricky Lambert. You know, and with the best one in the world, that kills it. Any danger?
When I heard Lambert was getting warmed up, I thought it was a wind-up.
Listen, we've been strikerless, basically, for our starting formation for, what is it, the guts of 2 months now, because he doesn't rate the likes of Barini, Balotelli or Lambert to start. So this baffles me when we're looking for something and he throws them out, that these are like the first people that he turns to
because
throw
the guys are shattered mentally, like, you know, in terms of confidence they have to be.
Yeah,
and they know they're not trusted
and they're not awfully good either.
Well,
but he started Lallana before Lallana got injured. Lallana was a starter as well, so this makes no sense to me that, like, he's got Lallana on the bench there. we're playing the formation where Lallana can play in one of the two behind the strikers, and he doesn't go for it. He throws on the strikers who he obviously doesn't rate enough to start. So he just throws them. It's like throwing shit at the wall and hoping some of it sticks. Like,
but if you think about it, when he brings them on, we then start lumping crosses into the box. Jesus wept. That's all Chelsea want us to do.
Yeah.
And it's Lambert going out wide and throwing
across to Sterling, who's up against two things because Balotelli is playing left wing at this stage.
Yeah. What's wrong with that picture? Yeah, I know. Sachin, what was your take on Brendan's decisions and the way in which the substitutions panned out? Would you share the frustration that's clearly evident in the two lads here?
Yeah, I totally agree with the guys there. I mean, just quickly on Lovren, I think it's one of two things. It's either just a purely sort of tactical thing where he thinks Lovren can't play in the wide defensive positions because I want people to carry the ball there, etc. So he can only replace Skrtel through the middle, or it's what's probably more likely. He just doesn't trust him and he's doomed and he'll try and sell him in the summer, which is, I think, the more likely scenario. I think I feel quite sad about the situation because spend £20 million on the centre half and for it to go this badly is just terrible. And I still think in there somewhere is a decent player, but I just think he's doomed. I think if you're not, as you said there, if you bring in on Glenn Johnson instead of Lovren for the left centre-back position, then that just bodes poorly. On Lallana, I'm a huge fan of Lallana's. I think he's a really, really good player. I think he should be playing more. I don't understand why at the start of the season he had that sort of huge period where he didn't play. He had a couple of games in a row where he played really well against West Brom, I think, and then away at Real Madrid. And then he didn't play for months. Then he gets back in the team and he does really well. And then he can't get back in the team again. It's baffling. Ricky Lambert, self-explanatory, just a bonkers decision. And Balotelli, I think with Balotelli now, it's got to the point where he's just throwing him on, desperately hoping that he'll just do something, that he'll just, you know, he'll roll the ball off outside the area, smash it, and it'll go into the top corner. And he'll just do one of those mad Balotelli things, which he's done throughout his career. It gets to sort of desperate levels with him now. I thought he was absolutely appalling yesterday. I thought he had that shot, that side foot shot, I think it was in the first period of extra time, which ballooned over the bar, which was just technically absolutely atrocious.
It was abject,
It was terrible. Then he has that sort of shot in the second half of extra time where he should have crossed it. It was just an absolutely appalling performance. And I agree with all the guys. All the subs were really, really strange.
Yeah, but it is that thing that we're saying, Phil, isn't it? That, like, yeah, okay, the guys individually were poor when they came on, but like, they know that their manager doesn't particularly trust them. So, like, what did he expected Mario Balotelli to do, having been digging him out during the week? It's hard to know, isn't it?
It's a hard logic to understand if you've been, you know, criticising a player, saying that he's struggling to get into form and a whole lot, and the fourth person that you bring on to change your options up front.
And poor Lallana's standing there in his little bib going, pick me, boss. He's standing. He's the only one standing up. The rest of them are covered in blankets. Lallana's there. Me. Yep. Not a chance.
I think everyone was confused as to why. At least get him on for the moment. And some things I always wonder about, because he didn't have a particularly good game against Bolton. You know what I mean? Just because a player has one bad game doesn't make them, you know, doesn't take them out of the form that they've been in. Now, when he came out against Chelsea the last time, he had that wonderful shot that saved by Courtois, led to that resurgence that we had for that second part of the game in Anfield. And you're saying, you know, maybe some players like playing against certain teams. It's like, you know, you're saying to yourself, maybe he'd relish coming on here and being the hero in terms of what's there, because I know Lambert would love to come on and relish being the hero, but he's not going to be. Yeah. Unless something mad happens. Even the one that there was a free out given for it, his header is horrific. He wasn't anybody jumping for him. Like, he didn't even get to the goal.
I know.
And like, the referee saved him with the whistle, because, you know, you're just look at those. It's so frustrating. Because, again, after the first leg, you're thinking to yourself, yeah, there seems to be something building. You know, there's a bit of momentum and all behind them. I would have been as happy to see a couple of the youngsters on the bench. To keep that pace. The one thing that I've noticed about our young players, and even again last night, our one touch football is brilliant. With the younger players, the likes of Moreno and Sterling and Coutinho, they're all able to play really good one touch football, and it moves us around the pitch so quickly. Even Henderson, right? And when we were in the good spell in the fourth, up to about 60 minutes or so, that was the essence of it. That's how we were getting around Chelsea.
Yeah.
As soon as we got the older players on, who need to take a touch the ball, need to look around to see what's going on, etc. That stopped, and that just let Chelsea come on, close us down, win the ball up high, and then the poor players ended up just showed how poor they were in terms of what was going on.
Yeah,
but all being all, look, it was a great game.
Fucking hell, that's probably the best way we could possibly end that. All right.
It was good, but it was bad.
Right, let's take a look forward to Liverpool versus West Ham, the Saturday game, home match at Anfield. And we'd have to hope that, you know, this apparent upturn in form is going to get back on track when we're back in the Premier League. Sachin, how are we feeling about West Ham in terms of the run of form that they're in at the moment? What kind of a threat do they pose, do you think, at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, sort of two minds with West Ham. I watched quite a lot of their game against Bristol City last Sunday, was it, in the FA Cup? Mm. And for the majority of that, they were absolutely terrible. I mean, they were well off the pace. They were easy to get at. They looked sort of like just basically quite a tired team. But then again, they still won. And that's the massive worry, is that they just seem like a team who are in a really rich vein of form, in the sense that even when they're not playing well, they're going to win games. I think Sacco, Valencia, their two new strikers of this season, they both look really dangerous. Andy Carroll's playing well, and you'd think he'd have a point to prove against us as well, obviously. Mm. So it is a slight concern, but I think their defence is gettable. I think if we start at a decent pace, we can get at them, and if we do score relatively early, and obviously Sturridge, I mean, there's talk that he might feature in some form, which would be great. Even just have him on the bench and have him as a potential threat would be great. I think it's a game where you just have to start. We have to start quickly, start well, and then we can open them up quite well. I think midfield, we should dominate midfield. I don't think their midfield's up to that much. I know they've got Alex Song, who's quite good, but they're quite a laboured, slow midfield. I think hopefully what I'm hoping is that, you know, as disappointing as last night was, we did play well. There were some really good signs. The momentum and the confidence in the team is definitely there. And I just hope that carries into Saturday's game more than any potential tiredness from playing extra time and from any sort of sense of deflation from losing. But I think it's imperative we have to start well on Saturday, start quickly.
I'm curious, you mentioned the Bristol game. I didn't see that or even see any highlights. Did they have, you mentioned they dug out a win even though they weren't playing well. Did they have a solid team out, a decent, strong side out? In the
yeah, it was it was their first team, you know, pretty much. Yeah, it was their strongest team, and they were terrible. First half, they were absolutely appalling. They looked so slow and so off the pace. Mm. It was unbelievable. And you thought, you know, Bristol City will score and win this game, and then they just, the longer it went, you sort of obviously then thought, well, West Ham going to nick this, and they did. They were terrible in that game for large parts of it. And the reason that I think they looked so poor was they were playing against a team that were playing with lots of energy, with lots of pace, which is kind of how we should be playing and how we do play. So that gives me the confidence to think as long as we start well, we should win.
Yeah, that is encouraging. Paul, the ghosts of Carroll and Downing, do they hold any particular fear for you?
Yeah, basically, because I know Sachin said they were awful against Bristol, but the fact is that Sam Allardyce is like an abhorrent human being who like sets his teams up as if they're, he sends them out like it's the Champions League final when he comes up against Liverpool. So I think the Bristol game will be out the window. I think they're going to come out like firing. And obviously Downing didn't even do too badly against us. And Carroll, are there even any of their forwards? You take the likes of Diouf, Sacco, Valencia and Carroll, the thoughts of them against, like, you know, Lovren or Johnson, if one of them comes in, that, like, that's terrifying. Like, you know, like having the ball just lumped at them all day long like that. And like Carroll obviously is slow, the other two are fairly mobile. But so yeah, like I think, like Sachin, I think we have to like match it from the start, make sure, like, you know, we're not like, you know, their physicality and all, make sure it's not a culture shock at the start, make sure we start off strong and get going at them, then we should hopefully win. But it's the Allardyce factor where, you know, we do look vulnerable to that sometimes when someone sends it out like it's the biggest match in the world. Mm. And we're kind of looking around going, well, why are these so up for this? Like, yeah. So I'm just hoping that doesn't happen.
Yeah, Andy Carroll, to be fair to him, is one of those little stages of his career where he does look like a savage footballer altogether, to be fair. Would you be in any way worried about him in particular?
I hate Allardyce.
Yeah, you don't worry about
I the genuinely
question.
Hate him. I can't stand looking at him. Mm. Right, and I can't stand Downing. I despise Downing. If he fell down a sinkhole in the middle of Anfield, I wouldn't shed a tear. Like, just disappear.
Well, so you look a bit like him, though.
Shut up.
wonder, why do you hate Stuart Downing that much? That's an extraordinary hatred.
Phil hates loads of people this much,
though.
No, I hate him. He's a coward. I remember when he was at Liverpool, I used to just despise every time he appeared. He disappeared in games, and then his statements that used to come out after, and even the statements that have come out since then, he's just a little prick, right? And I just cannot, I cannot for the life of me accept him.
I'd love to have been beside you, you know, when he shushed the Anfield crowd after he scored. Look, he's shaking, Phil's shaking. I'd have loved to have been beside you when he did that.
Yeah, that could have been one of those moments where you would have just, the red mist would have descended, it was over the barriers.
the vein was coming out of the forehead.
No, but I do. And what I want is, I want Henderson or Lucas to cost him. I want them to do it like within 2 minutes. I want him to jump on his leg, right? And I want him to, because the one thing that will happen is he will disappear out of the game. Mm-hmm. When he played against us last year, Flanagan absolutely crippled him over on the sideline, and we never saw Downing. Downing went into a shell and started hiding behind the players, like the Downing that he is. So that's, we need somebody just to kick him up in the air.
Whereas in the last match, he was actively encouraged.
He never got kicked. Nobody got close to him. Everyone was too nice to him. Just kick him, and he won't be in the game. And he's been their driving force. You know what I mean? You're talking about Andy Carroll having that was the question.
Yeah, that was the question.
But Downing's been having the form of his life.
And it's absolutely disgusting to be sitting here talking about how to stop Stuart Downing, isn't it?
It really is.
Soul destroying.
I guarantee you, if we had Costa on the team, it'd just go in, cripple across face, take him down, anything. Yeah. Just take him out. Just kick him. He can't accept physicality in a football match whatsoever.
And he plays centrally, doesn't he? Henderson. Yeah. Henderson should just do it.
It really wouldn't be an issue if we could rely on the fact that we had Sacco and Sean there. You could forget about it. Just forget about it. He's a non-event. He would be a non-event. My worry would be, to go back to the thing I was asking you, Skirtle directly up against Andy Carroll and them pumping balls to Andy Carroll, which he will win all of.
But with the three at the back, we're more than covered in terms of the actual... You know, there's enough cover around. It's the set pieces that you're more concerned of. Say he starts Johnson, or even Lovren for that fact, right? The two of them continually torn off at set pieces, right? So Carroll is just going to go and sit on them. Literally sit on them for the actual set piece, knowing that at some stage he's going to get a free header.
Yep.
And that's literally... So there's two ways to address it. You either get Mignolet to come for absolutely every ball that comes into the box, right? And say, if you drop it or you miss it, we'll deal with the second one that comes after it, but just make sure you get something on the ball.
Yeah.
Or you say, right, whoever Carroll is, you double team him. So you say, if he goes on to Johnson, you ask Chan, the only one that's left. Yeah. You tell Chan to go and stand in front of him. Do not let him, under any circumstances, do not let him get a free header anywhere in or around the box. And as I said, you kick down and you take him out of the game and you neutralise. That's how you neutralise West Ham.
As Sachin said earlier on, though, what you're talking about there is some sort of coherent approach to stopping set plays, which, you know, I mean, what are you trying to do?
Well, those two are going to be fired up. They're going to go back there, and they're like the shite that's come out of Downing since he's left. Like, you know, he thinks now in the form of his life he's going back to give two fingers to Rodgers, and he'll probably give two fingers to the cop as well. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
There so could it's be just, a shushing. Yeah,
you just kick him hard. Up into the air.
Sachin, it was bad enough there until you had your little interjection about why do you hate him so much, because this guy's just gone off on one here the last little while. Can I come back to you and talk to you a little bit about what you think the thought process will be? Like, I mean, I know the next game, I think, isn't until the following, is it
Wednesday,
the Bolton game. So I suppose there's very little considerations in terms of you just play your best team. Allowing that we don't know anything about Sacco and there's a possibility of a change there which would be unpalatable, do you see any other changes from the midweek team, from the team we've just seen exit the Carling Cup?
Well, I'd play Lallana personally. You know, he didn't play at all.
For Gerrard, Sachin, or?
Possibly, yeah. I just think we've played, you know, that's been a hard game, a proper brutal game, you know, on Tuesday. I mean, literally almost when you think about Diego Costa. And I think, you've played 120 minutes. And I think somebody needs to be just pulled out. I just think that's a team that needs a bit of refreshing. Obviously, there might be one at centre-back or along the back three. But I think just need somebody somewhere else to go out. And, yeah, I would possibly take Gerrard out. I'd put Lallana in. I think, you know, he's a high-energy player. As we said, we need a high-energy performance. There's not much you can do with it. I mean, that is our first team, and I wouldn't tinker with it too much. I'd certainly keep Lucas and Henderson. and maybe look to drop, not drop, but rest one of them against Bolton and get Allen in or Rossiter or whatever. But yeah, no, I bring Lallana in for Gerrard, so that'd probably be my only change, I think.
Yeah, fair enough. Paul, any changes for you in terms of the structure of the team that we saw go out of the cup?
No, that'd be pretty much for me as well. Lallana in for Gerrard. I think, obviously, it would suit that. I think it's something, obviously, the sub that should have been made, and I think it would suit it if we started again. And I don't think we have to put too much effort into resting players. I think there's three solid days either side of the Bolton match, like with the West Ham to Bolton and then yeah. Bolton to the Derby. So, or to the match the next weekend. I think you play the strongest team basically against West Ham and then maybe try and change it up a bit against Bolton, even if it's to do with like what subs you're going to make.
Yeah.
I don't think there has to be wholesale changes at all.
We play high tempo and do that bit of physicality that you need to do at the start. They won't live with us. They won't. Look, genuinely, we'll be able to get the back four, we'll be able to pull them out, we'll be able to get chances away. So, you know, the positives that have come out of the recent run is that when we play high tempo, when we move the ball around quickly, we play high tempo, we look a very good side again. Now, given the fact that you will have Sturridge at some stage during the match, whether it's whether he starts him, whether he brings him on for the last half an hour or whatever, that gives us something else. Now, seeing Sturridge on the bench will be such a fill-up for the fans, for the team itself, known that it won't be Lambert. It won't be Balotelli that comes on. It'll be Sturridge.
It'll be your best striker.
Yeah. And, you know, you'll be able to bring a goal thread in.
Yeah.
Or if he starts, then it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, look, it doesn't matter if he comes in and everything bounces off his head. It doesn't matter. It's a symbolism of having your...
But it also occupies defenders' minds.
Yeah.
And creates more space.
Yeah.
Like, if Lambert starts in that game or is on the pitch, nobody's going to mark him.
Mm.
Because he's not going to offer a threat. You know what I mean? Like, that's singularly what Sturridge does. They won't take their eye off him. He will move defences around. His movement will move defences around. He will take players out of the way. He'll create more space for Coutinho to operate in. He'll create more space for Sterling to operate in. And even if we have Lallana, you know, again, he'll be on the pitch. He'll be buzzing around. He'll be able to operate in the space. It's about utilising the space. Our home form has been appalling this season. You look at it, it's you know, we've drawn four games. I think we've only won three or something like that, right? And that's where our biggest failure in this season has been, because our away form is much better than our home form. And we have to turn that around. And we have to turn that around quickly. Even going to our recent games, we drew against Bolton, we drew against Chelsea, and another two cup matches, but they were both home matches.
Yeah.
So we need to get back to winning home games, making sure we put our home games to bed if we won't have any chances of challenging for the top four. And we need to build on the positives. And the positives we have is we move the ball quickly, we look a good team again.
Yeah, Sachin, I was going to actually just drop that into the conversation before Phil mentioned that point and as a kind of a statement. That is the one takeaway, isn't it, from the recent form, irrespective of three-ish dodgy enough kind of... not great results, let's say, in terms of the draw with Chelsea, the draw against Bolton, and then the defeat last night. There is still that wonderful football getting played at times. And as Phil says, we can almost rely on that now. And if we do play that style, it should be too much for even a ramped up West Ham.
Yeah, I think the major positive of the game yesterday, the only positive in a way, because we lost, obviously, was just absolute confirmation that we have an identity. Yeah. I think what was the most heartbreaking thing about the early stage of the season is I certainly felt I had no idea, no sense of what this Liverpool team represented. You know, the whole guts of the fantastic team we had last year had gone. We were as bad defensively as we were last year, but we had none of the attacking kind of shape or verve or swagger. There were games like Sunderland at home, which was so depressing, it was unreal. But what we've got now, what we've had since the United game, really, since we went to three at the back, is an identity. As the guys have said there, playing high tempo, quick, short passes through the team. And I think the midfield, that sort of that four-man midfield, we've got the box, as it was referred to earlier, is really crucial to that as well. Those two in midfield and the two ahead of them works really well. So we've got that, and that's something we can rely on. All this team's really missing now is goals. It's literally all it's missing, I think. And we know we've got a world-class striker to come back. Don't put too much pressure on him, obviously, because he's been out for so long. But I think that's literally all we're missing. We've got the defence looks better. The goalkeeper, as we said, is playing better. We just need a proper striker. And I think we should win more games than we don't until now, in the end of the season.
So for you, with the obvious exception of the potential change there at the left side of centre half, it's pretty much the same 11, and then maybe Lallana for Gerrard.
Yeah, that's the only change I'd make. Yeah. I'd play Lallana. You know, he's totally fresh, and he'll allow us to play at the pace we need to play at to overrun West Ham.
Okay. Well, look, I mean, we've kind of done the rounds now in terms of what we think the team will look like. I suppose we might as well get a couple of predictions from people on this. Paul, how do you see this game going at the weekend?
3-1 to us.
3-1 Liverpool. Sachin, how do you see this one working out for us?
We'll concede from a corner and then we'll win 2-1.
Delightfully specific. Yeah, I'm seeing Liverpool win as well, Phil.
I'll go with the win and just about scruffy win.
Scruffy win.
3-2, because we probably won't have Sacco, so we probably won't keep a clean sheet.
But we might have enough to.
With Sturridge back, if we go with the high tempo front line, all the facets that we've been doing well lately. Don't change the midfield.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And Gerrard from the bench as well is a wonderful thing to have.
Gerrard from springing from the bench for 20 minutes where he can put his whole game into 20 minutes and do something.
Yeah.
Imagine having, like, if you needed a call on a 1-all or 2-all or something like that, and you're able to call on Sturridge and Gerrard from the bench. That's huge. That's straight away the team you're playing against takes the wind out of their sails, pushes them 20 yards back.
You compare that to your shout just before the game the other day. Stay to that bench.
Well, come on.
Stay to it.
Stay to the bench. I was like, what's this? Who's picked that bench? Is Pasco being on team picking again?
But the way we've been playing, it's been really creative. Like, all you just want to do is stick to Sturridge, just plonk him on top of the team.
Yep.
And you would think that we'd score. Like, we'd still be in the car. We'd be in the Carling Cup final or the Capital One Cup final. We probably could have thrown him on for half an hour against Bolton. He would have won the game for us. Like,
yeah.
And we'd be, like, God knows how many more points better off on the run since the United game. So that's all you just want. You just want to get him fit and, like, keep him fit for at least like 3 weeks before he gets injured again or whatever. Hopefully by a striker.
So no pressure on poor Danny then. Okay, that'll do us.
I am Lou Schwarre. You are listening to Trippers Chat.
Right, let's have a look at a few of the things suggested by our listeners for talking topics. I suppose we acknowledge at the start that we just don't want to talk about transfers.
Transfers?
Yeah, what transfers? It's just not happening. So let's take
a look. Is Arda Turan sorting for us this year?
Arda Turan is.
And Quaresma.
Simao.
Simao's driving the bus. Quaresma's doing tour guide. It's going
Turan.
To be good.
Arda Turan's already in Jose Enrique's basement.
So let's take a look at a completely different topic and one that we can get a little bit of conversation out of. Michael Freeman is wondering, if Hendo is the new captain for 2015-2016, who would you choose to be vice captain? I presume he means obviously of the current lot. And is it a given? It seems to be. Is it a given that Hendo's captain? What is he the right choice? Paul, I think you're not 100% on this, are you?
Yeah, I don't know. Obviously, he's grown a lot in his Liverpool career, and
he's only 5'6" when he joined.
Yeah, he was only a little lad.
Jesus fucking Christ! he's grown a lot, obviously, in stature.
Fuck's sake!
And obviously, Gerrard's not going to be there, and like he is a lot. He's noticeably more vocal and more demanding of the ball, and he's like a bigger presence when Gerrard isn't there. So he's got that going for him. I just wonder, is it maybe a bit early for him? Because he's still not someone who every week looks kind of like Billy Big Bollocks going around screaming or anything, or like a complete leader every week. But he certainly is growing that way. I probably would have liked it if we had one more senior player that could have done it for another year maybe, and then Henderson get it. Because I'm still not 100% sure that he's ready to be like the leader every week.
Mm. It would have been lovely if we could just transition there with Glenn Johnson for a couple of years.
Yeah.
That's unlikely to happen.
Get the 6-year contract on the table for Glenn, I'd say.
That's unlikely to happen. Are you happy with Hendo as a captain? There, Phil, do you think?
No, I think he's a good vice captain.
A good vice captain.
I think he's a good backup.
So would you be, ideally, would you promote from within, or do you see someone coming into the club and just, here, you do the job?
I think you need a natural leader in there. I've never been a huge fan of Gerrard as captain. I think he's been great in terms of, you know, in terms of what he does on the pitch, but I don't think he's a natural leader in terms of, you know, an archetype.
And you think
captain.
Hendo might be too much more of a captain by example type again?
No, I think he's a good go-to man. I think he's a good sort of foil to the captain on the pitch. I think you need good backup If you're the captain, you know, to have somebody else that's there, that when time's needed, he can step into the breach.
Throw me a few names.
You're not calling him like a Gary Neville type, are you? You know, there's the captain and then there's team arsehole. Like.
Yeah, the little golf merchant.
I wasn't calling him a team arsehole now, but... I don't think he's the right man for the job.
Okay, we'll take that to its logical conclusion. Who is?
Whoever we appoint as captain.
Oh, for the love of fuck. I mean,
Downey doesn't like it.
Work with me.
I'll work with you.
Go on. Give me a name from someone from the current staff, or is it something that we need to go out and actively look for and bring in
Does depend on who we sign. If we go out and sign an absolute powerhouse of a midfielder to play alongside Henderson,
you just throw him the captain's
armor. You know, people have done that before. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not unusual for somebody to come in and say, oh, he is an absolute leader and I'm putting him in as captain. Like, if they gave Emery Chan the captaincy, I would have absolutely no issue with that at all.
Yeah, but...
Like, he comes across to me as a leader on the pitch. You've seen it when he's gone into the back four. The same Sacco's been captain at international level.
Yeah.
And is a natural leader again in terms of what it is. And like... I like the captains to be like big, powerful players as well. You know, the ones that can't be bossed around on the pitch.
Hmm.
Like, for me, it's not somebody who can boss. Now, like, the great... Henderson has shown in stages great sense. Like, standing up to Costa was great, like, for that. You're seeing to yourself, well, that's what you want to see. You want to see somebody, you know, putting the bollocks out and a whole lot. But there's other times where I'm just thinking to myself, you just need that little bit more. Whether it's a little bit more, you know, aggressiveness. He's not aggressive enough in the right way with referees, let's say. You know what I mean? And that could be an age thing. Going back to your point, is it a little bit too early for him? Mm. It may be a little bit too early for him.
I think that might be a little bit of a harsh shade in terms of the aggression and the presence on the pitch, but I do see what you're saying in terms of maybe a little bit extra in what we were talking about earlier on, where you need to score that chance. You need to put that away and offer the team leadership from that respect. I can possibly see an argument there, but I just don't see anybody else, lads, in the current squad who's
Another one would be Sacco, but again, it looks maybe a bit too early for him.
He's even said,
like, at the start of the season that his English needs to get better. He said at the start of the season, this is when he was out and we all thought he was getting stalled, like, after he stormed out at the derby. And a few weeks later, he did an interview where he said, when my English gets better, I will be talking more, and like the natural leader in me will come out. So like, I would, if that happened next season, I'd have no problem with Sacco being captain. And I get what Phil says as well, because I think Sacco and Chan, when you look at our players, they're the two most kind of alpha players. Like the two, they look kind of unruffled by everything. Chan comes in, it doesn't matter who he's playing against, he seems to be brilliant. He's his chest out. He doesn't give a shit who he's up against. Like, and so I think it'd be a big shout to give it to Chan because he's so young. But like Phil, I think at some stage he could captain us, Chan.
It's a hell of a lot more likely that one of those two guys that you've mentioned will get vice captaincy behind Hendo.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a lot more likely, and then you might.
I think if Lucas is still there, he probably gets the vice captaincy if Henderson is captain.
Yeah,
right or wrong, like, do you know what I mean?
Lucas or Skirtle are the obvious shouts.
Yeah, I wouldn't want Skirtle as captain or vice captain.
No, God. No.
I think he's too flawed as a person. I've seen him disappear in games.
Person?
No. We're talking about leadership.
He's a thief.
We're talking about leadership,
yeah.
Right? And like, there's too many times he's had to have a leader beside him to look good.
Yeah,
he's not the leader.
Well,
he's got
two beside him now, and he actually looks great.
But this, but this is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you.
He needed Agger beside him,
yeah.
And Agger was a leader.
Mm.
You know what I mean? He wasn't great when Carragher was beside him. That could have been because the switching roles or whatever. But you know, he's needed a leader beside him to look good. Even when Hoopia was there, he looked better alongside Hoopia because Hoopia is a natural leader.
Mm.
Now, for me, I just don't know whether Henderson brings that level of authority yet on the pitch with the rest of the players. Like, that, I know they all respect him, but I don't know if he has the authority that he has there. And therein lies my issue with him getting the captaincy at this moment in time. Maybe he does step up to it. I'm potentially being harsh on him, but I'm just telling, from my point of view, I'm looking at other players and thinking, I personally would have more confidence if other players had it. And I still think if we sign a real midfield leader because Gerrard is gone, that there's every chance that player will come in and be the captain. In as much if you sign a real leader,
Vidal type or something.
I'm not going down names. I'm just saying if you sign that type of midfielder, say for argument's sake, you sign somebody like Schneider, right?
Mm.
Who's a real leader on the pitch. you know, to play in that zone with Henderson, if you're doing a 3-4-3 or whatever way you want to go, even a 4-2-3-1, whatever way you want to go with it, right? But he's a leader on the pitch, and he comes in as a leader on the actual pitch itself. Like, and Lovren was sold to us as a leader, and he's as far from a leader as Skirtle is.
Mm. Nah.
So, you know, there isn't that many candidates in the, like, I wouldn't give it to Sterling, he's too young. Coutinho similarly, I wouldn't give it to Lallana. You know, I'm not, you wouldn't give it to Sturridge, because he is, Sturridge is a real out and out centre forward, and he does, and again, he's going to be missing through injury for an awful lot of things. So you're really down to who in the back four essentially are in that midfield are you going to give it? You're not giving it to Allen. You might consider Lucas, but then again, is he going to be there?
Will he play whether he is or not?
So now you're down to Henderson and the centre-backs, because you're not giving it to the full-backs either. Mm.
This is making it sound like it's a process of elimination, he's the last one standing, but I actually think he's a lot more merit than that as a captain. I don't see anyone rivaling.
But this is why I'm going through the characters,
yeah.
Right? And you can knock out so many of the characters,
yeah,
that we have. Like, if Suarez was there, he'd have the captaincy every single day of the week.
Yeah.
Because on the pitch, he demanded that players play to his level. And that's what you want. I still think Henderson has to bring that demanding to play to his level as part of his authority on the pitch. And sometimes he gets lost in the actual games itself, and he isn't demanding that lift from the players and the lift from the players around him.
Mm. Well,
you see kind of isolated incidents where you think like, yeah, that's Hendo. He's kind of maturing, and he looks like a leader. It's just that, is he going to do that consistently? Because like Phil said, like, Gerrard's not someone who, you know, he's not someone who always stood up, and you could always see him barking at it. Like, if the team was up against it, you couldn't see, like, he tried to do things on his own. You didn't see him kind of rallying the troops too often. Mm. And that's someone that you'd rather probably someone who constantly, like, someone intelligent that constantly is at them. And like you were saying about the refs, like, I remember last year when we played Arsenal, we demolished them. And Henderson told everybody on that pitch to fuck off at some stage during the game, including the ref. Fuck off, that's bollocks. He's up in his face. If he like does that more often, like, you see the likes of John Terry, he's an absolute scrow. But like every single time the whistle went yesterday, John fucking Terry, 80 yards, running up to Michael Oliver.
Yeah.
And like you want something like that, and like not completely, not being a rat to the other team, like not constant mouthing, but you know, someone who stands up, if there is a kind of fight between, someone who stands up, gets in the middle of it.
Someone who's thinking about the team.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So like you do see isolated moments of that from Henderson. It's just whether he's mature enough now to do it all the time.
I really wouldn't doubt the kid. I think he's got that in spades, and I think when Gerrard's off the scene, I think you'll see it really, really come to the fore. Hopefully. And listen, the thing about it is, if he has as Phil says, whether it's a new one or whether it's Lucas playing to the top of his level, if he's playing in his proper position on a week-to-week basis, I wouldn't doubt that at all.
Mm. Yeah, again, as I said, I just, you know, if you've got so many young players, which we're going to have, right, that captain is also almost a father figure for them on the pitch.
Mm.
So that's what I'm sort of like. I know Emery Chan is young, but already he looks like a settled professional, fucking beyond his years.
He's the daddy.
Yeah, you know what I mean? He does look that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Another one that was Michael Freeman's question, by the way. Another one that's come in from a regular contributor is Neb, and Neb is talking about something that we touched on earlier on. So we'll just keep this particularly brief. But he basically was talking about the fact that every team should have their own genuine bona fide asshole, a kind of a go-to, like a Costa figure.
Well, if they don't, like, it's going to be a dose of the human centipede going on.
That's a horrible image, and I'd like to move very quickly past
that's
it.
An aperture.
That's some horrible stuff. Do we have, and to kind of segue on from the Henlo chat, do we have someone in that mould, that, you know, someone, you know, that nasty age?
I don't think we have anyone nastiness. No. That, like, I know, like, we're going mad about Costa, but like you do like to see it sometimes. Some of the stuff Suarez did, not biting or anything like that, but you know, some of the snide stuff that he did,
yeah,
where you're like, yeah, that's it, like he's in their head there, like he's got your man on fucking toast there. Your man is fuming to be on the same pitch as Suarez. Yeah. Your man doesn't know where the ball is. All he's thinking about is, where's that little prick? Like,
yeah.
We don't have anyone like that at the moment.
Yeah. And do we have anyone with the potential? Does Markovic somewhere deep in him have the potential?
he does.
I think he might.
Even
you know?
The look of him, you're kind of like, you can imagine him doing something horrible. Like, hopefully he could kind of mature. Obviously, we've seen him kind of develop in spades, like over the past few months, from the fellow who looked terrified of the ball when he first came. So, like, it could go that way. Like, obviously, it's early days.
I'd love that. I have to say, I absolutely love.
Yeah, there's the potential for some proper snideness in him. Yeah. See, it's not your kind of region.
The trick with the asshole is it has to be the right type of asshole.
Oh yeah, well, we have a lot of the wrong type, don't we?
We do have the wrong type of asshole in the club. But like, we need the right type. So it can't be just pure destructive. Like, if you look at Costa, right, going back to him, what he is a complete fucking asshole, right? The same as Suarez was in what he delivers. It's designed to be destructive to the opposition and not to his own team.
I like that thing you were saying earlier on about where Costa said, was it you, Paul, was saying that, like, you know, my footballing background isn't from an academy, so therefore, I'm rough and ready, and this is the only way I know. It's such a line of shite.
He has specialised in fucking winding
people
up.
He's a bad bastard.
And that's just what you want. And listen to me. Fans love a complete asshole in the team.
Yeah.
Right? One that, as I said, isn't destructive. Like, you could have a Cassano who will just make, he will actually cause an explosion in the dressing room, in his own dressing room, though, in the wrong way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, that. You don't need that. What you want is just one nasty little fucker, right? Yeah. Even when we had Mascherano, like, that team wasn't particularly nasty, but we had Arbeloa who had it in spades. Inside, right?
He's got the edge on him.
And Mascherano used to torment fuckers. And you could see the eyes opening when he had a chance for 50-50, right? Because he could throw in a bit of afters into the thing. It doesn't have
just to leave
be,
a bit on the more than necessary.
It doesn't have to be the overtly Suarez Costa type.
Yeah.
It just has to be that fucking.
It was a shit day and a shit result, but will you ever forget the head on him as Rafa was trying to lead him off the pitch against United that
time? Oh, Jesus,
That was just so much fun. That's the kind of thing you want.
Even Shelvey had that in him.
He does.
And he does. He has it just, he doesn't, there's no dial. Yeah. The dial is broken. So it just,
broken.
Once it goes on, it could go to 165 out of 10. Yeah. Or it could say
someone like
one.
Costa knows where the ref is, knows what he's going to get away with. Whereas Shelvey will just he'll lose ahead and do something stupid and get sent off. So, you need someone, it's really calculated with Costa. Like,
I don't know.
Even if he looks like he's lost the head for a second, like 20 seconds later, it's like he makes a point of just laughing at the defender, you know, smiling, or even kind of like, you know, a little tap on the back, like, oh, I'm only messing. And then, like, you know, 10 minutes later, he stamps on his ankle again. Like, he just always seems to be in control. He knows, like, where the limit is. He's not going to get himself sent off doing it. He's just a lovely prick, like.
A lovely prick.
To play with.
Yeah.
Lovely prick to play with. Oh, God. The innuendo trippers. Oh, what a good one.
They're going straight in the back of Viz with that one.
A lovely prick to play with.
A lovely prick to play with. And some chocolate, like a Kinder egg.
I'm having a fucking mirror today.
Okay, some of the short ones then. One in from Nick Wall, which took my attention particularly. Nick is wondering, would you rather have Niall Quinn do a live commentary of your life, or everything you eat tastes like shite on a regular basis? So basically, you enjoy.
So
do
we need Steve out to commentate in our lives?
Yeah.
Or everything going to taste like shite.
I felt sorry for him last night. I listened to that absolute shite hawkery coming out of Niall Quinn.
We should substitute Niall Quinn. I think we should kidnap Niall Quinn and substitute him with Steve for a while.
Wouldn't that be absolutely fantastic?
It'd be hilarious. The outcome would be brilliant.
That would be fantastic. But imagine that. Imagine Niall Quinn.
Steve Daly having a fucking platform on Sky Sports. That's terrifying. That's absolutely terrifying.
No, he looked different this week.
Yeah. So what are we going with?
Oh, well, I'm
before happy. Last night, I'd have said Niall Quinn, but no.
Well, did you find him comparatively inoffensive until yesterday evening's?
Well, I always knew he was a fucking idiot, like a bit of an idiot, like. But Jesus Christ, yesterday, give me the shit sandwich. I'll eat shit all day. Before
are you able to interact with him, or is he just purely?
He's
like
just. I think it's like, you know,
a toured voice.
Yeah, just.
He's just in your head. Yeah,
it's just. Oh. He's narrating. Imagine Niall Quinn narrating your life. Imagine that. That is fucking horrible.
I got a dream.
And there's Phil going into the shop there. Oh, God, he's gone into the shop. Is he going into the shop? Shut the fuck up!
I don't think he's made the right decision going into the shop. I'm confused by this decision.
Which was, by extension, your Stephen Daly impression. Okay. And one from Caelan, Caelan, who sent in a couple there, actually, but we'll go with this one. What's your favourite giant robot from the movies? You must have a shout in this with your sci-fi fetish.
Nah.
Favourite giant robot from the movies? I'm trying to think of a few.
Terminator.
Is it which one would you go with? Which of the Terminators?
You can only go for any.
Really?
You can really. You've got all the liquidy lads.
Yeah, I was a big fan of the liquidy lads myself. Yeah.
It has to be Terminator.
Yeah. Yeah, Terminator, Paul. You getting in behind that?
I don't know. You know, that Transformers film, I liked Barricade in that, the police car. Oh, he was fairly cool.
Oh, yeah. I can't get through any one of those movies. I can't get through them.
Yeah, and they get progressively worse as well.
Do they?
Yeah.
I wish C-3PO had been melted down.
Into what?
Just melted
down. Why? Did you just hate him, did you?
Yeah. I still don't know what role he plays in all the fucking Star Wars movies.
Would you say he's a charlatan and a coward? Is he the Stuart Downing of
he's the Stuart Downing of Star Wars.
Hold on, going back there, you know what you were saying about the Terminator? That sounds like, you know, like a scale for measuring shites. Like, oh, well, I had an Ernie and a few liquidy lads on the back of it. Like,
I had a C-2000. Dodgy T-2000 going on there.
I don't like the liquidy lads, though.
Nah, I don't like the liquidy lads. You never know where they're going to pop up.
Okay, we'll finish with some admin and we'll start with our weekly shed for Astro Park. Book your pitch time and play some football here by getting online at astropark.ie. The new edition of Neil Poole's We Are Liverpool fanzine, which has some articles from myself and Neil Gray, is now available at weareliverpoolfanzine.com and it will be sold outside the ground at home games. At only £150, it's a hell of an offer. And if you want to take advantage of an offer that we have now with Neil, you can mention to him on the day.
Exclusive.
You can mention to him on the day that just mention the name of the podcast when you're going up to buy it, and you can get it for £1. Alternatively, you can also mention the podcast. You can also mention the podcast and get a issue 6 for £150 and a back copy for free.
Back copy for free.
So I really hope you enjoy the post-production values that we've put on this. Phil's been in the studio long after we finished here with those
£1
effects. Your day trippers tonight were Sasha Nakrani, Paul Brennan, Phil Casey and myself, Trev Downey.
I saw one, something like, would you rather join in your man that riding once or watch them every day?
Yeah. That's just meant like that can't end well. Like,
you obviously take the free pedal every day, looking at them.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Sorry.
It's a no-brainer. Hey, mate.
It's the two boys, Fallows and Hunter. They get name checked more often than anybody else, and nobody really knows.
I think they should get their own television programme when Ant and Deca having a holiday.
I'd love to see
Fallows and Hunter, Fallows like big and night Hunter. In.
Yeah.
And they're just sitting there with Football Manager playing Southampton all the time.
Yeah. It'd be brilliant if they were actually a bit like Vic and Bob. That'd be class.
Who's Vic and Bob?
Who's Vic? Oh, fuck off. Are you serious, man?
Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer.
Are you serious? You are serious.
Yeah.
They're in the war.
Man.
Jesus.
Oh, it's fucking brilliant. Oh, Jesus.
Main characters.
Paul, you'd love them.
Pair of wankers. I'm never coming in here alone again.
Paul, you'd love them.
Yeah.
They're fucking brilliant. My comedy heroes.
Oh, from when?
From
the 1930s. These little stone tablets with gags on it or something.
Hey! Oh, it was just after the orchestra finished.